Thank you so much, Nick. Thanks for reading that. And our meeting format calls for a guest speaker followed by open discussion. Our guest speaker will share for 30 to 45 minutes before calling on people to share. During the open discussion portion of the meeting, we ask that you keep your sharing to five or so minutes so everyone who wants to share gets a chance to do so. And it is now my pleasure to introduce Mr. Frank D. from the Santa Clarita area. And Frank, thanks so much for being here tonight.
All right. Frank D. is alcoholic. Living the life sober and enjoying my sobriety. I want to welcome anybody who's new. And quite a few old-timers are here also. Newcomers. So, again, the newcomers. Welcome to the newcomer. Welcome to you, Adrian. I didn't see you in the beginning, so I'm saying hi to you. But anyway, wherever two or more are gathered, that's what came to mind. You know, we were going to have a Santa Clarita predominant meeting there, Bill. But, Bill, I want to say thank you. Yeah, you take the time. You take the time to put a meeting on for an alcoholic. Because that's all it takes sometimes, just to be able to be there for someone else. You know, of course, this, I don't even remember the last time that I was on the meeting and, or how you got my name, I guess, or something, I don't know. But anyway, it brought to mind when I went to, when I was in my early sobriety, my, before I keep going, my sobriety days, November 24th, 1982. I live in Santa Clarita, in case you guys don't know it, all six of you, seven. Anyway, and, you know, but anyway, what I was thinking was, what I thought of, because the meeting, you know, it's not an overpopulated one, but when I was in my early sobriety, when things weren't going so good, I was living in, at that time, in Canoga Park, after my divorce, and I was remembering not knowing what to do. But there was a convention happening in Lancaster, Antelope Valley convention, so I decided I'd go. And I went, and this is what happened. I went over there, and the week before this convention was going to take place, that's the 50 year that it was, half the people in the committee were against the other half, and they basically walked out. So when I went to it, I went to an alcoholic, I guess you want to call it an alcoholic meeting. There was only three of us. That's it. Just three. Well, we had a meeting, and that's what we did. And the reason I say that this is not to take away from this, but I'm just saying that we show up. We wake up, suit up, we show up. And that's the deal. Because this is a killer disease. It's a killer disease that I share about and I talk about. Mostly, or I share about almost in every meeting, I always put that verse out there because it's a true thing. I've seen way too many people die, and I've seen it happen over the years. So anyway, I will give some of my my experience, strength, and hope of what it was like, what happened, what it's like today. A couple of these guys have heard me more than once for different occasions, for different reasons of what I've shared. But there's always something to be said that maybe I've not been heard before, so I'm going to give it a go. Anyway, I was born in Burbank, California, raised in Canoga Park, and that's where I did my beginnings, in Canoga Park. Growing up, as a young kid, I didn't have a lot. I didn't have a lot going as far as my home. I actually grew up, I call it a shack, but it was a home, because a home is a home wherever you make it. You know, actually, the reason I'm saying that, too, just the other day I was looking at some pictures, old pictures that I found that were given to me. And I'm sitting on this little four-wheel little push cart. I was only maybe, I don't even know if I was 2 years old yet, but I was sitting there. The house behind me had a old, shabby, broken-down door and everything to go into the house and everything. But you know what? I had a smile on my face. I had a smile on my face. I didn't have much of anything, but I guess when you're young, you don't know the difference of having and not having. So long as you're loved one way or another, you feel happy. And I felt okay. I mean, I was smiling in that, and I'm saying, wow, look at me. I'm sitting here, not much is going in my life. But of course, at 2 years old, what can be going in your life? Not much. But anyway, so I grew up in that home until the age of 16. But I'll tell you how run down or how beat up that house was. I'm going to share some of this, but this is not why I drank. Every time it rained, it would leak and get out the pots and pans. Before we moved out of that house when I was 16 years old, our front living room couch had gone through the floor because the termites had eaten it all up. The bathroom wall had a V-shaped opening in it because it was sinking. Part of the bathroom was sinking. I mean, this is what I was living in. But you know what? That was my home. That was my home. That also was the home when I began to drink when I was 13 years old, before we moved out. And that's when my drinking began. I got involved with some people, the smokers, tokers, midnight tokers, and the easy girls. And that's what I was doing then as a teenager, because that's when I actually started consuming my first taste to alcohol. And I liked it. But I didn't know why. I liked what it did to me, but I didn't know why. And then when I got together with, of course I met a girl, and I met her on the weekends, and when I met her on the weekends, she had friends that had false IDs, and I learned how to drink. I mean, drink to the point that I puked my guts out. And I know I wouldn't do it again, but I did. And I did. And I did. Then I would sneak out in the middle of the night, tap on her bedroom window, 2-3 in the morning, and I'd go in there, and I'd stay with her till 4 or 5 in the morning so I could get back home so I wouldn't be found that I had left the house. Because I slept in an attached, my brother and I slept in an attached porch that was attached to the house. So see, already I was doing things that I wasn't supposed to do. Already I was sneaking around when I wasn't supposed to be sneaking around. But I was doing it already. But when I took that drink, it made me feel like a boss. It made me feel like a big man. It made me feel like, you know what? It's okay, it's okay. Your mom doesn't know. Your dad doesn't know. You get home back on time. They don't know where you've been all midnight or where it has taken you. And I'll tell you one thing. I would feel somewhat guilty, but I still did it. And as time went on, and when I was in junior high, I hung around with people that were not the right people, but I liked it. I liked the roughness. I liked the hardness. I liked the craziness that I was getting into with them. But I always tried to be the good son when I would come home. I tried to show a good face to my mom, to my dad, to my brother and my sister, but I had a sneaky side behind me. And if I engaged in any time of alcohol, that other side would come out. The devil in me would come out. The monster in me would come out. The anger would come out. I was not the same person. And I liked what I was doing. That's a big thing. But I kept doing that. And then when we moved out of that place, like I said, when I was 16, went into high school. I was in high school. When we got out, a decent home in Canoga Park. And when I was going to Canoga, I was working part-time, and I was working at a car lot as a used car lot boy, as they call it. And I always remember these two guys, and they were my heroes. And one of them was Gino, and the other one was John Miller. Gino Grossi and John Miller, I remember their names. They were my heroes because on weekends I would ask them to give me some food. A bottle of something and a six pack of food. And that would be enough for me to get wasted and loaded. Just to begin. Just to begin. And to me, they were my heroes. And see, I continued through life doing things like that. I had that part-time job. I did my drinking where I could. And I look back today and wonder, what the hell was I really doing that for? Of course. Because I didn't know I was liking it, man, but to me it was a different feeling. Except when I was around my home, my family, I would not do that. But I had an uncle that when we used to go to parties and everything, we would get wasted. We would get wasted. As teenagers, we the veteranos, the older guys, whatever party it was, they would always give us a, it was like, come on, man, have a beer with us, have a beer with us. And that's what I would do. And I would see the fight, I'd see the blood, I'd see the stabbing, I'd see all that. And when the cops came around, when you hear the siren, I would take off running and jump fences and everything so I wouldn't get caught with anybody else. But I always remember this one. It's amazing how sometimes you can remember this guy, Hector. I always remember when they took Hector out in a gurney because he'd been stabbed in the eye by rivals who had come in from either Pacoima or San Fernando. In those days, that would happen sometimes. Somebody would come from another town to join the party, start messing with the girls there, and all of a sudden, a big clash. You see, that was some of my growing up that I went through. And then the drunks in town. When I was growing up as a little guy, 8, 9, 10 years old in Canoga Park, I stayed with my grandmother a lot, my grandfather. When my mom would be working, I would stay there, and on weekends we'd go to my house, that shack that I called before. But anyway, so I would stay with them, and I would see the drunks that would walk the streets. They all had names. I mean, they were winos. The reason I knew that is because they used to come to my a little Mexican store. They call it the little Mexican store in the hood, in the barrio, just built that my mom's family had built and put there. And everybody in the neighborhood, basically, would go to that little store just to get their goods. You know, their bananas, their coffees, their fresh meat and everything, because my grandfather always had rabbits and chickens. And in those days, it wasn't USDA stuff. They would sell the rabbit there in the refrigerator. They would sell the chicken there in the refrigerator, you know, duck eggs and chicken eggs, you know, all this stuff. It was different. Not like today. You could not do that today. But I would see those front drinks, those wine machines, and wonder, why were they the way they were? Why would they talk to the power poles in the middle of the night if I happened to be, or not that late, I was up at 10 o'clock, I would see them out there and wonder, what is wrong? And then when they would come into the store to buy the wine, toque wine, or a porter or something, and my aunt, that was mainly the main lady there, she would sell them their wine, and they stunk, and they would come in dirty, filthy, and I still did not get it why they were that way. And they had names. One of them, that, well, I'll never forget, Satanás, which means the devil, and he looked like the devil. I mean, he had every bruise and everything in his face, and his face was just, and there was a guy named, they called him Hígado, which means in Spanish, liver, because everybody knew he was a devil. Then there was Lucas McCain. We used to call him Lucas McCain. Name was Lucas, but we called him Lucas McCain because that's when the Rifleman used to be on TV. So we had names for all the winos. But they all met their death. All of them. All of them. And they all met their death because of that drinking that they did. And I did not completely understand it. But yet I was learning already how to drink when I became the teenager. And in high school, by the time I got to high school, I was drinking a little bit more. Then the smoke came in. The pills came in. You know, that funny laughing grass, as we call it. The pills that get you a little dizzy or wound up. And then, of course, that food. And tequila became my partner. I drink vodka in the beginning, but tequila became my partner. And I liked it. I liked it. And I got through that. I got out of there. I went to college for a bit, and then I went into the military in 66, to 66 in 1970. And when they sent me overseas during that Vietnam War and everything, my drinking progressed, and I didn't know what was happening. And what happened was I had married before I left, had one child before I left for overseas, and then I left my wife with our second child, and I went. And I didn't want to go then. But I went anyway. And I'll get away from that for a little bit, so I won't stay on that alone. But by the time I came back, in today's view of an alcoholic, I was a full-blown alcoholic not knowing it. I did not know it. Because my wife then would tell me, you know, you drink too much. And I always just tell her, you just don't know how to have a good time. And then when I puked my guts out, like one time when she made a turkey dinner and everything, and I got sick and everything, my parents had come over to join us, and when they left, I got so sick that night, and I told her it was the potatoes that got me sick. Even though I'd been drinking with my parents. Now, there, by that time, I was already in my early 20s. But see, I was always blaming. And then when I began to really get into it, I wouldn't come home. And I finally got a job with the city of L.A. That's a good one. This is what began to change for me. So I figured, well, I got to keep a job here. I can't be out there drinking because it's going to be not good. My very first day we went on the job with these guys. These guys are already veterans, already well-processed workers, linemen, because I worked into the power division right away first. And when we took our last break of the day, we went to a liquor store. I grabbed the Coke. This guy grabbed the beer on my left. The other guy grabbed the beer on my right. And I put that Coke back, and I said, if I can do it here, I'm going to. And that was my next run for 9 years. 9 years. I worked around high voltage power. 9 years. I look today, I could have been killed by the power. I could have killed someone because of it, or I could have destroyed equipment. That did not happen. But here's what happened. By that 9th year, the reason I put it that way is because that's when everything had to crash on. I wasn't coming home like I said previously. Things weren't so good at home all the time. My drinking got worse. Fridays were deadly for my ex-wife today, but at that time. Because if I got to drinking with the guys right before leaving work to go home, sometimes we'd go to the Crying Cow in Chatswood. Not Chatswood, in the... Yeah. Chatswood area. No, wait a minute. Granada Hills, doggone it, it's in San Fernando or Chatswood Street. Anyway, and we'd go there, and we'd go in there right after work, the sun's out and everything, and I'd come out, and the stars would be out. So you know what that meant. I stayed there for hours. And after that, it just continued. The progress is what happened to me. And after a while, a weekend would come, and I'd come home. A weekend would come, I wouldn't come home Friday. A weekend would come, and I wouldn't come Friday, Saturday. And a weekend would come, and I wouldn't get back till Sunday. Because I always made the point, I have to get to work. And I made it to work, hungover or not, and I did that many times. Man, that was... If you work around heavy equipment, and you have to sometimes pound things, shovel things, use a hammer, use a drill, use especially one of those concrete breaking drills like this, and your hands are going like... Believe me, I lived it. And I did it. But I didn't stop. And I couldn't wait for that next drink. That's what it was getting to. And I didn't know that I couldn't wait. But I can look back today by being sober and my sobriety date, November 24, 1982, which takes me over 38 plus years now. 38 and about 6-7 months. Anyway, I know today that I was hurting myself, my family, and all that without caring when I had that drink in me. And then what happened was she had had enough, and she said, that's enough, you're leaving. And I said, no, I'm not, you are. And then I would get scared because I would say, I'm going to have to scare the kids. By that time, we had two young kids, 8 and 7 or 8 or 9 or 10, and the other one, he was just 3 years old. No, 11 and 12. The other one was 3 years old, and I'll tell you, it was not good for me then. And finally, she said, why don't you go with me to the church, and I want you to talk to our priest and all that, so, because things were not working out, and I was willing to do almost anything, but I wanted to keep that drink available. And that smoke, oh yeah, I hid, you know, pot and everything in my garage and stuff. I found that stuff later once I got sober, but that's another story. Anyway, finally one day I went with her and we went to talk to our parish priest and I thought, you know what? I'll do whatever you want. Okay, let's do it. And I went over there and that's when I met my very first alcoholic, not knowing, and actually the first sponsor. Sean Flanagan was his name and he was a Monsignor at Shane Catherine's in Visita. And when I sat with him and he asked me all these questions, which was kind of dumb to me. Do you think you drink too much? Do you ever get sick? Does your wife think you drink too much? Do you ever miss work? And everything was no, 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 no. Do you ever have hangovers? Yeah. But I go to work. But I go to work. I make that paycheck. I make it no matter what. I still do it. So anyway, he told me this, and this was the beginning of my complete change and of what it's like now and how it started. He tells me he's going to pick me up on Thanksgiving Day, which is actually November 24th. I'd already been sober a couple of days. And I said, okay, but this is how much I did not know about AA. I figured, you know what? When my wife was making the turkey and doing all this, and she was dead, and my in-laws, by-laws, all my outlaws, and my mom, my parents came over and all that, and I thought, you know what? Sean's not going to come get me. He's not going to come to get me because it's a holiday. And I figured, if this thing's an AA, whatever it is, I'm sure that it's a holiday for them too, so that I won't have to go. Whew! Thank goodness, man, I'm going to escape this. No, I didn't. He called me early before he got there, and he told me he was picking me up, and I kind of questioned him, why? And he said, because I'm taking you to an AA meeting. And I said, what? On Thanksgiving Day? And he did. And one thing before I say that, said that was November 25th, but I carried my date on November 24th, and Bill Hazmat has been the only person that's ever noticed that I've got that. My first meeting was on Thanksgiving, but that's not my sober day that I carry, and I'll tell you why. Because the following year, when Thanksgiving came, it was on like on the 26th or the 23rd or something, because Thanksgiving keeps moving every year, exactly the number, so I said, I gotta pick a date. So that's how 24th came to be. Anyway. Thanks, Bill, for saying that to me. Bill, he's over here. He's the one that's the host for here tonight. So I started going to meetings. No, I didn't want to go. And I said, you know what? What am I going to do? I felt like my back was against the wall. I wanted to drink, and I didn't want to drink. And I didn't know what to do. But I wanted to show good face to my ex-wife. I wanted to let her know that I cared about this. I wanted to let her know that I was going to stop drinking, in my head, at least for a month, or maybe a little more than that. Then drink like a gentleman, as they say. Our hats are off to you, right? I'm not a hats off to you guy. Because, like I said, when I would drink, I would disappear as my progression got worse. My anger got worse. Everything got worse in my progression of alcoholism. And my, they were partying. And the pills, and the smoke. But anyway. So I went to the meeting, and I thought all the people were there primarily. I thought they were all counselors of something to take care of people that have a problem with drinking. Because they were all dressed too well, too good, too nice, and everything on that Thanksgiving day when I went to my first AA meeting. And every single person that was there, Sean Flanagan told me, they were sober. Because I asked them. Every time we went from one place to another, it took me to like three different places. Are they all sober in there? And every time he told me, yes. Yes, they were all sober. I could not believe so many people would not drink. I could not believe it. But it was the truth. He spoke to me the truth. But I must say this. After a while that I stayed there for a while, I would meet people like anybody else does in the meeting. I did not know what Alcoholics Anonymous was about. I would come in late and sit at the back of the room next to the exit door. So when the meeting was over, out the door, and I would sit in the back. No one come to talk to me, please. Leave me alone. It's not because I'm going to stay with you guys. I'm just doing it so I can be have things okay at home. See, all my ideas were for the wrong reason, not for sobriety. They were because I was trying to please someone else, and I wasn't thinking the person that I had to get sober was me first, so I could be there for my family or anybody else in my life. And so I kept doing that for a while, and I kept going to meetings. And after I kept going to meetings, it was like, it was feeling much better. I thought things were getting better at home, but they really weren't. But my whole being was changing. My physical being was better. My emotions were getting better towards others, towards my wife, towards my kids. All those things, even though I know today I damaged them to certain places. I know I put tears and fears into them. I don't know how many times. I'm sure I did it many times. And I probably put a fear into them that when they wouldn't see their father come home. I never really thought about that. What must they be thinking, or how are they feeling, or do the kids want to go here, go to the park, go to the beach, anything. See, when I got through, you know. So that's because I started going to those meetings and I began to hear other alcoholics and what they had done, but how they corrected it too. How they kept going to meetings. Okay? How they kept going to meetings. And this is what I began to do. I began to go not just to the Valley Club, was my first meeting place I went to. And then I started spreading out. I went to some meetings in San Fernando, scared, sitting in the back. Pacoima, scared, sitting in the back. I went to Canoga Park, Hole in the Sky, sit in the back. I mean, I went to midnight meetings or candlelight meetings so no one would see me. And went to know in my early sobriety, I'm sitting there in a candlelight. I get there late. I look at the candle straight across. My father had two other brothers. And one of his brothers happened to be in that meeting. And he was there sober. The only reason he was there, because they told him, if he didn't stop drinking, it was going to kill him. He was older than me by 10, 15 years, but they told him, if he didn't stop drinking, it was going to kill him. And I'll tell you, when I was growing up as a little kid, that uncle, oh man, he was a drunk, man. He was a drunk. And I'll tell you, man, and I even saw him get in a crash one day right around the corner where we all live, where I live with my grandparents sometimes. And he was so drunk, he couldn't fight the person who crashed into her. And it was a woman. But then her boyfriend came out, and my uncle kept challenging this guy, you know, wanted to fight. And he was so drunk. Fortunately, in those days, it wasn't like cops were coming and everything. No, none of that happened. But anyway, I began to continue to go to meetings, to the Hole in the Sky, the Valley Club, the Nest, where Ted Summers Ted Summers was Nick's sponsor before, but Ted Summers and Fran used to go to the Nest, and I met them there, and I would see people, and I began to all of a sudden get a fellowship. This is what continued to be for me in my life, and it was getting so much better. It was getting so much better for me. I got a opinion that this is getting good. Oh man, I get to the juicy stuff, man. But anyway, I started going to meetings and kept going to meetings. But then I heard of this guy. I saw this guy begging in front of the store that in my very, very first day when I saw him, Mike Wright was his name. He greeted me at this house that Sean Fannigan had taken me to, John Brennan's house. Some people have mentioned that in meetings that they knew this man because he was powerful in AA. Anyway, this guy greeted me in a three-piece suit with this vest, his tie, polished shoes, and everything. And I thought he was the president of AA. Of course he wasn't, but I didn't know. But 6-7 years later, when I was speaking at the Nest in Reseda, he was laying on his back because he couldn't sit up. He was so drunk. And I mentioned something like, most people, when they come to a meeting, they stay vertical, but some aren't horizontal. He put his head up, looked at me like, what a jerk you are, you know. And we buried that guy. And that began something for me that this was a killer disease. And it didn't change. And I started saying, you know what? people died here. It began to change my attitude completely even more. And then as I continued in my sobriety, I took a few guys, like I took them to Canoga Park, and this is where from a lot of my life went from there on. I took these two guys, a guy named Jimbo and a guy named Mark. I took them to a meeting in Canoga Park at Parkwood Hospital. They had a rehab there, detox and everything. And I took them both, and I told them, well, we're here, you guys, you go on ice and share. Jimbo shared. Mark said, I ain't doing none of that. Come on, just say something. You wouldn't. We buried that guy, too. Within a couple of months, he went out, and he died. And see, I've seen this many times in my sobriety. And that's why I call it a killer disease when I do. Because it is, and we know that. But it changed a lot of my attitude. And then as time went on, I became a secretary. And this is the things that I'm getting into now, the things that I have done that have helped me and kept me going. I became a secretary at that Parkwood meeting. And I became a secretary at the Valley Club. And then I either became a secretary at the Hole in the Sky. I moved around and I participated in my sobriety. Because one of my other sponsors, after Sean moved away, would tell me, participate in your own sobriety. Participate. Don't just show up. Don't think you're going to get this through osmosis. And the more participation that I did, the better it came. And then my sponsor told me, go to that Cabrito house and get involved over there with the men. I went over there thinking that I was going to, okay, I didn't want to go to men's meeting. You know, I said, I don't want to go. I like the mixed meeting because at least I like to see the girls and all that, right? Well, I went to the Cabrito house and went to a meeting. There was mixed meeting. I went over there. But in time, they asked me to go on the board with Cabrito house. And I was on the board at Cabrito House Recovery Home in Canoga Park that is still there for 5 years. And I helped out and I saw many guys come in there and I saw many guys improve their life. And I heard of quite a few of the guys who went out there and died. Some got shot, some got stabbed, and some just expired like that. You know, it took them. And I saw guys come in with wealth down to zero. One guy had inherited his father's driving company, and he ran it to the ground. And next thing you know, I saw him in a rehab at Warm Springs. Years later, Warm Springs is a recovery camp that was up here in the mountains beyond Castaic, but it's not there anymore. They shut that down. But anyway, so my participation in sobriety has really changed there. And I continue to do that even today. Here in Santa Clarita, I've been on their convention committee for at least 6-7 years. I can't remember. I know we've been around 14, maybe even more than that. I haven't yet tracked. And now also I'm in the convention committee with Santa Clarita towards the San Fernando Valley Convention. And a lot of my friends are in the convention in San Fernando, and I stay in touch with them. And it's really cool because it's like a reunion. I go over there once a month, except the COVID, but of course, and get together with them. And so see, that's how sobriety works for me. And then there's several of you guys here, Nick, Kirk, Phil, Danny, you know, and this new gentleman just came back into my life, Carlos. We got to beat the crap out of him if we want to keep him here. You know, but that's the truth, man. This is a killer, man. I'm telling you, this is nothing to play with. Because I've seen guys play, and I've seen guys die. I've had many tears that were painful to me. I don't like it. But I've had tears of joy that I do for the guy that has stuck around. And all we do, all I've done, is keep coming back. I read the book. I have a meditation book that I read. This one happens to be Native American, but I also have the 24 Hour book. All those have something for me. I have a power greater than myself in my life. I call it the Creator, Great Spirit in my life. That's the God of my understanding. I say God a lot when I say my prayer. I ask God to help me on the next move, the next day, whatever comes my way. May I be there to serve Him and myself so I may help another alcoholic. A man, woman, or child that may pass in the path of my life. I'm there for the alcoholic, but I'm there for every man, woman, and child as part of it. Because that's what I do today. and it makes my life so much better. What a blessing that is. What a blessing that is. Because I would have missed it all had I just said, you know what, I've had enough of you guys, I'm out of here. And now I'm a proud grandfather of 11 grandchildren. When I got sober, I had zero grandchildren because my kids were just barely growing up. Today I have 11 grandchildren, and two of them are great-grandchildren. And next month I get to go fly to Washington to go see them. Because I stayed sober one day at a time. Now, one of those grandchildren has ever smelled the breath of booze, pot, anything on my breath, and they won't. One day at a time, so long as I keep it sober and clean. You know, because today I live a life that I'm grateful for. Today I live a life that I think of others for. Today I like to speak good words towards others. And today I know how to give forgiveness and prayer to others. And I ask for forgiveness myself. So my prayers are always for the better of all. We've lost a man recently that was very near and dear to us. He's Santa Clarita, by the way, Bill. Mario Huato. And we're going to have a funeral for him on Monday and a memorial for him. And there's a lot of people that love him. And that's what I've learned to do in these rooms, too. I've learned to love those people that love the other people that I hear in Alcoholics Anonymous. Who are there with the God of their understanding so they won't hurt themselves anymore and be good to themselves and so they don't struggle in their lives. Struggles are going to come our way, but the only thing is I have found different ways to handle my problems and my situation. And I pray for direction and whispers to me of God speaking to me. Because when I share and I talk, it's not always about that I have it planned and everything like this. I don't write it down like that. I write a few notes saying, you know, what do you want to carry today, friend? And this is what I usually say. Like Mario used to say, I don't know, because I don't know. And then they say, you know, I'm saying something. But I try to throw a few other things that maybe some of the guys haven't heard it. But if they did, okay. That's why I'm a person, too, that I'll listen to anybody today. Even if I've heard him 5, 6, 20 times, because I sometimes might pick up something that I didn't hear before. And that's what I do today. What a blessing it is to be able to be here and not go out there in life and hurt people intentionally or unintentionally, because today I watch how I am with others, whether it be in my home, at a store, in a market, at a park, at a beach, at a hiking trail, doesn't matter. In an airport where you really got to watch people, you know, or in a ball game. Because you know there's crazies in there sometimes. A few of those $12 brews, man, and they go out. And, you know, so I'm coming to my time. Yes, I'm coming to my time. So I just want to say to you guys, thank you for being here for me. And I never understood that. In my beginnings, somebody would be the speaker and say, thank you for making the call, set all of me. Thank you for being here for me today. And they would thank everybody and I would say, I didn't do anything. But now it's a different way for me to see. Today I see with the eye of the heart, that I call it, where I care for other people in my life. And I try to be there for them as well as for myself. So with that, I want to say thank you for being here for me and listening to me. You guys have heard some of me already before. Thank you. Thank you for doing it. One more. The rest of you, and good blessings to all of you. And thank you, Bill.
Hey, thank you, Frank. Hey, we are now going to be starting the discussion part of the meeting. We'd like to hear from as many of you as possible. So, again, just keep an eye on how long you go for. We've got a number of folks here with us tonight, and now I'm going to go back to Frank, and Frank, if you wouldn't mind choosing some people to share.
Oops, you're muted, Frank.
I know. I like to kid around now, you guys. Frank Alcoholic still. And so before I start, I'm going to say this right off. Who wants to go to sleep first so I can ask you to share? No, see, look at, this is what I mean about saints over. You guys all started almost laughing. Okay. So, anyway. Kirk, I want you to stay awake. How are you? Kirk.
Hey, I'm Kirk Alcoholic. Thanks, Frank. And yeah, Frank's always there for another alcoholic, no matter what. Whenever you call, Frank is always there. And when Frank tells me he's going to be somewhere, I'm there. He shows me what it's like to be for another, what it's like to be there for another alcoholic every day, no matter what. And I try to follow that example today. And, you know, when you talked about, besides all the trouble alcohol was causing you, whether it was getting sick or hiding it or whatever, you just kept doing it anyway. And that was me too. And it progressed and I kept doing it. And, you know, I was addicted to alcohol. I couldn't put it down. I lost the choice in the drink eventually. And eventually, you know, I say, you know, my problems piled up on me. I couldn't solve them, and I was addicted to alcohol. I had no answer for it. And what finally got me in here was, you know, the impact I saw it was having on my family. You know, I was just changing. You know, I was just starting to act out in ways that I didn't think was possible for me. You know, but, you know, there is a better side of me in that alcoholic. But it was getting pushed and pushed away more and more and more as my disease progressed. And that better side was not evident. It was very rarely seen in my home. You know, and just in the way I was acting. And I had to get, you know, I thankfully had, you know, knew somebody in AA who took me to my first meeting. I needed help. I admitted to myself I needed help, and I didn't want to be the person I was anymore. I wanted to get sober, and I just didn't know how. And before I got sober, I admitted that to myself that I couldn't get sober, but I wasn't willing to get sober. I was like, okay, I'm just going to be an alcoholic, and that's just the way it's going to be. I can't quit. And like Frank said, you know, the blame game. You know, I went into my house and I said, I can't quit. I'm not quitting. This is just me. So you just accept me for who I am. And we'll be fine. This is it. Love me or leave me. That was my sickened and warped mind from alcoholism, thinking that would be okay for me to go tell my wife that I was warped and sickened by alcohol and other drugs. And, you know, thankfully I made it to the rooms. I went to a meeting. And my first meeting was a great meeting. I felt the love in AA in the rooms. And I don't know if you've been in the rooms or not been in the rooms, if you got sober on Zoom or you just haven't spent enough time in meetings. But for me, my first meeting was a great meeting, and I wanted more. I wanted to come back to the second meeting, and I just kept coming back. Did I change right away? No, I didn't change right away. No. You want a quick fix? I don't know. I can't promise you if you're trying to get this thing, or if you haven't got this thing, or if you have got this thing. You know, it's not a quick thing. I got 1 minute, and you know, but it's worth it. It's worth it. Just stay sober. Stay sober and find people in AA who can take you through this program. You know, and that's all I can say. Stick around, get connected, stay in the middle, and participate, like Frank said, participate in your own sobriety. Thanks for letting me share, Frank, and thanks so much for your lead tonight.
Thank you, Kirk. Nick, come on board now, because I want to make sure you can make it through the night, because I know you're... Go ahead, Nick.
Nick Kersey, alcoholic. Frank, I never go to bed before midnight. Shit.
Oh.
I thank you for your share, Frank. And I guess it doesn't matter if it was Canoga Park or Frogtown. It still was the same growing up.
Yeah.
I shared in a meeting today about I grew up in a neighborhood where it wasn't the worst, but it wasn't the best. And people died or got hurt because they were too loaded to run. They were too loaded to get out of the way when they should have. You know, so I totally get where you're coming from. I know all that. You know, we're pretty close in age, so I really get all that stuff. You know, I used to love them Red Devils when I was a kid, and most of these people never even heard of those. Mm. I didn't know what that shit is. You know, and it's funny because I was thinking about people buying me booze when I was a teenager. By the time I was in high school, man, I was going and buying it for everybody else. Mm-hmm. We'd go to this one liquor store, and a guy would kind of wink at me. Oh, yeah, you're on the football team, right? And I'd, oh, yeah, I wasn't on the fucking football team. Shit, no. But if you wanted to sell me booze, I'm there. You know, and we drank, and we did all that stuff. And, you know, when I was 16, someone asked me why I drank so much. You know, and I didn't know. You know, I should have been in AA when I was a teenager. You know, but I didn't get sober until I was 41. I spent many years drinking and using and surrendering, not willing to surrender my right to drink. It was my cultural right as a Mexican to drink tequila, goddammit. And I'm going to hold on to that. You know, and I did that until I absolutely knew that if I didn't stop drinking, I was going to die. And when I realized that, it scared the hell out of me, because how do you not drink when that's all you've done your whole life? All you know how to do is drink for everything. Happy, sad, glad, mad, whatever. My mom asked me one time if I was going somewhere, and I said, can you drink there? And she said, no. So I said, well, why would I go? Why would I go someplace where you couldn't drink? I didn't trust people that didn't drink. You know, and the thing, and we have so much stuff that's the same, Frank. You know, I got that job at the city, too. I got that good job at the city that I showed up most of the time. But the funny thing is, the guys would drink at lunch, and I knew, even when I was in my 20s, if I started drinking, I was going to take off. I was headed to the racetrack. I was going to go to the bar. I was going to do something. I could not stay, you know, if I started drinking. As soon as I got off of work, I worked in downtown L.A., and there was a liquor store in Chinatown, not even 5 minutes away, and I was there every day on the way home. And I lived less than 10 minutes away from there, and I would be on, like, my third or fourth beer by the time I got home. Because that was just the start. My house became that house that all the neighbors hate. You know, people always drinking, and a couple of big dogs and old cars and people coming in and out. Lots of music. That was my house. I only realized recently that I was the lower companion. People came to my house to drink because they knew that I was always drinking. And when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, you guys showed me a way to live without taking a drink one day at a time. You know, and I'm so grateful for that. I've done things and been places that someone from my neighborhood was not supposed to do. I went from being someone that hated teachers as a kid to becoming an associate professor at a college that I went to. And how does that happen? It's the grace of God and the power of Alcoholics Anonymous working in my life. You know, I've been places that even I was amazed that I'd been there. I've seen the Pope up close. I've seen the Queen of England up close. And I stood in the Sistine Chapel and cried because the images were just so beautiful. You know, I've done places or been places that I should have been at a long time, been dead a long time ago, and never got a chance to get there. But I'm blessed with a sober life today. My sobriety date's December 18th, 1992. So, as I like to say, I got sober before newcomers had a union. You know, and those mean old timers, they didn't care about hurting my feelings. They told me the truth because they wanted me to live. They loved me enough to be willing to lose my friendship. They wanted me to stay sober one day at a time for the rest of my life, and that's what I've done so far.
Sure.
And I will miss my friend Mario every day. You know, we get to meet people in Alcoholics Anonymous that touch our lives, and we carry them with us. You know, and everything I know about sobriety, I learned from someone else. You know, I didn't know how to not drink, and you guys had to show me how. I will be forever grateful for that. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. Thank you. Adrian, I don't know you because you came in late, but just tell us who you are, and let's hear from you. Thank you. Yeah, you're still...
Hello. You guys hear me?
Alright.
Oh, hi. My name's Adrian. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you, Frank, for your share. I identified with a lot of it. And, you know, I'm grateful for that because, you know, I need a reminder a lot of times. I need to remind myself when I'm in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous that, you know, just like you said, one thing that stood out when you shared is that, you know, your drinking took you to a lot of you know, you didn't say this verbatim, but unsavory place, and I could definitely identify with that. So, you know, the rooms of AA is definitely, you know, was kind of a safe haven for me. So I'm grateful for that. I just realized I had some, you know, I realized this is an open discussion meeting, and, you know, I'm going to take this opportunity really to talk about something real quick, just to get it off my chest, because, you know, I know the book does mention sex conduct, and I don't currently have a sponsor, but I just wanted to get it out there. You know, it's kind of helped me personally in my recovery when I share it at a meeting. And, I mean, we're all men here, so I trust you guys. You know, I've done some pretty squirrely things, you know, lately in my sex conduct. You know, through the steps, I've realized I've treated women, every relationship, you know. I realize I've treated women horrible, you know, and, I'm doing my best not to repeat that behavior. You know, it was suggested to me, I won't go through all the details for anonymity, but it was suggested to me, you know, that basically, by somebody that has a lot of experience, why don't you sit down and meditate, you know, like, well, what do you think a good husband should be, or a good father? You know, like I was hearing you share, Frank, when you got your life together, you know, why don't you sit down and pray and meditate? What are the qualities you think a good father should have? What are the qualities you think a good husband should have? You know, what are the qualities you think a good coworker should have? You know, and I realized that, you know, I had those qualities early on in life, but as my drinking progressed, all that went out the window, and, you know, all my morals went out the window, and, you know, basically I started to treat people like crap. But, you know, once I did start the steps, I'm grateful for the steps because I realized I was able for the first time in my life to identify that. And before I had the steps, it was hard. It was, you know, I really can't explain it because I'm not a psychologist, but I guess the best way I can explain it is that I was just in a fog of drinking and other substances, for so many years that all my morals and belief systems that I was raised with, you know, just kind of went out the window. You know, I was raised, hey, you know, it's wrong. I was raised right from wrong. You know, you don't steal. You don't lie to people. You know, you don't be abusive to your partner, you know, you cherish your woman. That's what I was raised with. And, you know, I realized all that went out the window, but, I just kind of wanted to get that out there into the universe. And I don't want to vent too much about that. But, you know, I realized that even when the drink is removed, I guess what I'm getting at is that my sex conduct can still be squirrely. I mean, I can still treat women and I can still do some pretty weird things that are just not right, period. You know, I can go after another man's woman, you know, and that's not right because that's something that I did when I was drinking. And, you know, our steps say that, but just me as a human being, you know, I know today, once the bottle's removed, that I don't do that behavior. Now, I mean, I'll say this. Am I able to not do that without a program? My past experience says no. So today I'm going to just, you know, for today, I'm so grateful for the meeting because I can identify with you guys. Yeah, I'll wrap it up right now. And, I'm thankful for the fellowship, you know, because this is a safe place where I can keep those feelings out. You know, I can't share this with family members because, you know, they don't understand me. I can just speak for myself. And, thank you for your share, Frank. And thank you, I didn't catch your name, sir, the gentleman that shared after you, because, you know, when I hear you guys share, I can identify. I hear a solution, and, it keeps me coming back. So thank you.
All right. Keep coming back, brother.
All right.
And the one thing I'll tell you is simple. The truth will set you free. And that means you got to be true to yourself so you can be true to any and all people around you. Any and all people around you. That's what it says on the coin. On the coin, it says it's to thy own self be true. Yes. Keep reading what it says. It's talking to you. Anyway, Carlos, it was a couple of 20 seconds or whatever you might have.
Is that Nick Garcia? Carlos, alcoholic addict. Is that the same Nick Garcia? No, it is. My guy, you look great, man. It's good to see you. Frank, thank you so much for your share. I don't know a lot of you guys in here, but hopefully I'll get to know you guys a little bit more as the as my journey goes along. And I was smoking weed, drinking every day, and I didn't have a problem. Trust me, I was good. My wife said I had a problem. I didn't have a problem. And I got into this little motorcycle accident, and I hurt my ribs, and I decided to self-medicate and pop 10 over 325 Norcos, and it started with 5 a day to 10 a day, and it ended up 30 pills a day, you know what I'm saying? And it's, I didn't know how to get off of that. I needed medical attention, so I called Kaiser, and they said they would take a few days, and I didn't have a few days. And I got my ass into a detox really quick. And it was, it's not your standard detox. It's called passages. And these niggas are crazy. Okay. Excuse my language. These people are crazy. You know what I mean? When it comes to certain things. So, but I have a nursing staff that gave me pills. I detoxed. I feel better. And, you know, but they gave me clarity for those 5 days. I had clarity. And, bro, to thy own self be true. Dude, there was some issues that I had to face. You know what I'm saying? I had to stand up to my ego and my pride. You know, there's a wise man in these rooms. He goes by the name of Frank Diaz. He told me one day, he said, put your ego and your pride in your back pocket, sit on it, and shut the fuck up, but in a nicer way. And so, you know what I'm saying? It's never left me. And this dude's told me hundreds of things, and it don't mean shit to me. And, like, all of a sudden, I'm like, wait, that's what this means, and then, and it's just all coming at once, and I'm like, holy shit, are you telling me I've been wrong this whole time? And it's like, holy fuck, and I'm the last one to know, and I'm like, who told me this? And I look to my right, and it's me, it's my own head, it's everything that tells me, I had to get honest with myself. I had to get honest with myself. And, thank you, Frank. I had to get honest with myself, and it fucking hurt. It fucking hurt. But guess what? I learned a new coping mechanism. I don't have to go get high when my feelings get hurt, it's okay. You know what I'm saying? When my ego and pride get hurt, I don't have to get high today. It's okay. You know what I mean? And, that's just because I just had to, come to terms with a few things, and I had to be honest with myself. And when they say to thy own self be true, you don't gotta be a gangster for this dude. You ain't gotta be a fucking tough guy for that guy. As long as you're happy with yourself and you're happy, then I think at the end of the day, I'm gonna be okay. You know, I speak for myself. Thank you guys. Thank you for letting me share.
All right. That's good. Mr. Danny. Let's hear from you, Danny.
Hello, I'm Danny. I'm an alcoholic. How's it going? Thanks for your share, Frank. You've been an inspiration. You know, you've been in my life for a number of years and things. And, you know, the struggles I've had, and a lot of you know. But no matter what, I don't want to drink because I know once it touches my lips and stuff, all bets are off. I tried it for many years. I started in junior high and went on through high school, started ditching, started hanging around with the wrong people. And, thank God that, I had 502s early on. I had a bunch of them and stuff, and the court would send me to the meetings. And it seemed like I went because I had to, not because I wanted to. You know, I had to get the card signed. And I always said, no, my drinking, you know, I'm doing okay with this. And it seemed like it was progressing worse and worse and worse. Until I finally had to get honest with myself. I think it was like 53 years old when I finally stayed. I went to an outpatient program. And like Frank said, you fill out this survey and so on and so forth. Do you drink, you know, how many times a day? How much do you drink and all this? And I said, yeah. Okay. So I started going to this program. And basically they would say, you know, you need to keep coming back. This is the way it's set up and so on. So I just went through it. And then they said, you need to start going to AA meetings. And I started going to the Raptors. And at that time, people were smoking. And I was like, man, I don't want to be there. These guys are smoking, fuming up the room. But I says, you know, it's not about me. And I started seeing people like were laughing and joking around, having fun. I'm like, wow, you know, this is quite a deal, but I got to get serious. So I started coming more and more and more. And I started getting in the book and going to more meetings, talking to people. I had a sponsor, you know, and it. I was doing okay with it, but then something happened, and I ended up getting another sponsor, which is Frank, the one that I have now, and, you know, I'm married, I got two kids, I've had a lot of problems, personal problems, a lot of it through this whole pandemic and all. And, but no matter what, I don't want to drink. You know, I don't. And I can be in a room with a bunch of people doing their thing. And I says, you know, I'm the one with the problem, not you. So I don't need it in order to.
I don't know if you can see me.
What?
Fine.
Oh, so anyways, you know, I just, you know, I'm happy that I have this program and I have all you men that I could share my experience, strength, and hope with. And, it saddens me. I knew Mario as well. I know Nick was one of his sponsees.
Kenny.
You know, no? I thought you were.
Kenny.
Huh?
Yeah. Yes,
okay. Hello. So anyways.
I was a sponsor.
Oh, okay. Anyways, well, thank you for letting me share.
Okay.
Very
good. Very good. All right. Phil! Come on in, Phil.
Hey, I'm Phil. I'm an alcoholic. My sponsor always told me, even if you get to a meeting a little bit late, you come and